We have offered 10 different amendments, 7 of them I personally offered on the House floor to provide meaningful property tax elimination or relief to the residents across the Commonwealth. We were ruled by the majority leader that they weren't germane. We were ruled that they were out of order. They tabled legislation. And every time we made appeals and fought, you never lose until you quit.
Welcome to Talking with Doyle, the podcast that gets State Representative Doyle Heffley talking. And Doyle, we are here to recap another week in Harrisburg. But I think one of the biggest highlights we're going to talk about is property taxes and how on the House floor, House Democrats admitted you specifically were right about property taxes. Why don't we talk a little bit about that and their admission there?
Well, we are in the month of June, and there are no easy days when we're in session anytime, or easy days of the job, but June is certainly one of the more trying times. But I think the lessons that we learned, and one of the things that I've been really consistent on is property tax relief, property tax reform. Mm-hmm. Over the last 2.5 years, we have offered 10 different amendments, 7 of them I personally offered on the House floor to provide meaningful property tax elimination or relief to the residents across the Commonwealth. And we were ruled by the majority leader. We were ruled that they weren't germane. We were ruled that they were out of order. They tabled legislation, and every time we made appeals and fought, and you know, persistence pays off, and you never lose until you quit. This is a big issue. It's something I hear about every day. I hear about it when I'm out in the community. I hear about it when I get home, and I think about it when I write my check out to pay my property taxes. And I know how families across Carbon County and the Commonwealth struggle. So we have offered so many amendments. This week, there was a bill dealing with some taxes, and the Democrats offered an amendment that would have, you know, diverted that money to senior property tax relief, and that was on Monday. And you can see some of the floor comments that we had in that debate, where we looked at the amendment, and the amendment was very poorly drafted. And it would have only provided relief for 8 school districts. And there was quite a discussion and debate on the House floor about whether that was true or not. And at the end, the Democrats, the majority leader, did admit, okay, we're gonna amend this bill in appropriations tomorrow. So they did. They fixed it so that it would go to all 500 school districts. And I think that's kind of a victory in a sense that for 2.5 years, because we persistently pushed. Now we're in a political season. A lot of folks are out in the community, you know, doing some political work, and they're getting, the Democratic majority that has consistently voted to block this type of legislation is feeling a pinch. We kept the pressure up on them by continuing to add these amendments, and we passed a bill that could potentially provide up to $500 million in new revenue to go to senior property tax relief. Now, that's a small step.
Yeah,
I mean, what we really need is we need billions of dollars, and my proposal would have been to take surplus dollars and drive that into the property tax relief fund and provide up to $1,000 relief for every homeowner just to start, and then continue to drive that money. And it was funny because this same week, the Democratic majority also voted to steal $30 million out of the property tax relief fund and direct that to other things when we have $30 million in other funds that are non-property tax relief related that we could have. And those were some comments that I put on Facebook, and I think a lot of folks saw those. So there's always discussions and arguments and working on every angle to try to get this relief because it is something that I'm passionate about, something that I'm not going to give up on. And we're going to continue to fight. We're going to fight through this budget cycle. We'll continue to fight into next year and beyond to provide that relief because I see the impact that these taxes have in our community and on residents. So we're never going to quit, and I think persistence pays off.
You mentioned one of those bills that Democrats brought up was House Bill 2446 that would have diverted some money from the property tax relief fund
to fire
departments across the state.
So it would have been only 30 fire departments.
And House Democrats never identified those.
Yeah,
right?
So there's 2,400 fire departments. So they would have taken $30 million out of the property tax relief fund. That's what the casino, the slot revenue that's supposed to go to property tax relief. Mm-hmm. And I hear about that all the time. What happened to that gaming revenue? And we have been fighting to push all that revenue into that. So we had an amendment onto that bill that would have taken the money out of non-property tax revenue and funded that. We could have funded up to $150 million. Right now, there is a structural, if you look at the IFO and the budget projections, there is a surplus in what was projected, but we still have, you know, a structural deficit in the budget. We could have taken dollars out of that, and I think our volunteer firefighters do a phenomenal job in our communities. We all rely on them personally. I've had experiences where we rely on them, and they are always there to do the right thing. So we want to make sure that we get them the resources that they need, but we should not be taking it from property tax relief. You know, we should be taking that from other budget, you know, in the overall budget. And we could drive, I'd love to see $150 million go into that program and provide the 2,400 fire departments across this Commonwealth with actually real money, not just handpicking a couple to receive million-dollar grants. That's not going to fix the problem.
Because you tried to ask that on the floor, which fire departments they were, and House Democrats, they didn't answer that question.
No, they didn't. They were just, and I think a lot of it was, the governor had this proposal, and I support additional resources going to volunteer firefighters, but let's not take it out of the property tax relief fund when we have other avenues, other revenue sources. I mean, look, skills games, for example, that could provide additional money that could go to fire departments. That could provide additional money to go to property tax relief. So there's a lot of moving parts out here. We should not be taking away from property tax relief from our senior citizens. And well, at the same time, while that discussion was going on, we really turned up the heat on them. Then this other bill comes up, and all of a sudden, at the last minute, they file an amendment, which we then had to correct their amendment. But I think that shows that you have to be persistent. You can't quit on these things. And we're going to continue to keep the pressure on until we get that relief that's needed.
Well, House Democrats didn't take questions. You did take questions during a town hall meeting you had this week, another mm-hmm. successful one. Yeah. Why don't we give a little bit of recap? Obviously, the big discussion there was property tax, data centers, and the inheritance tax.
Yeah, I mean, the telephone town hall format is great. Obviously, we can't do those during the blackout period. We can't do any type of outreach like that. So, but the month of June, when there's so many moving parts here in Harrisburg to what's going on, and this week the Democrats ran a bill out of committee that would take away your gun rights. We're going to oppose that on the House floor this week. And last week, there's been a couple of proposals by the House Democrats to take away local zoning control when it comes to data centers. We voted against that. We did the podcast last week with Representative Jamie Walsh about his legislation, which I support. And basically, a lot of the questions and the concerns are right. You know, there's folks in throughout Carbon County, throughout northeastern PA that are very concerned about, clear-cutting the side of a mountain to put in a data center, which I do not support. And we want to make sure that our local zoning control is there to do that. But also, if there's a lapse and a failure of our local governments to take that action and get and put those steps in place, that there are also a lot of state-level things to reinforce it, so that we're not going to be draining wells. We're going to make sure that the water's protected, the air quality is protected, and we're going to make sure that these types of developments are going to be going into areas that are industrial, brownfields or Superfund sites. We don't want to be using our pristine forests in the Poconos, which rely on tourism and recreation, to create these types of industrial developments. And that was, something a lot of folks on the call had concerns about. And this one of the things that we really want to continue to communicate with folks, what we're doing out here. There's several pieces of legislation, which I support, which would, one of them would be an 18-month moratorium, Jamie Walsh's legislation. Mm-hmm. So local governments can make sure that everything's in place for these types of developments. Another one would be to make sure that we're not taking that control away for local zoning options for our municipalities. And I think it's important that people need to hear that, because a lot of times there's a lot of confusion and a lot of misinformation that's put out about where maybe I stand or other folks stand on these issues. We know the governor is, trying to fast track a lot of projects. These types of developments should be, carefully considered and make sure that everything's in place. And developers that want to come in and do things right in the right areas, that's one thing. Right now it's a hot topic, and we'll continue to hold town hall meetings. I can't do an in-person meeting generally in the month of June in the district, because there's so many things so many times we're out here. And when we do the telephone town hall, sometimes they are shorter notice, because if we run late in session on the floor, I can't walk away from voting on the House floor to do a telephone town hall or a podcast or anything else. And we do events out, anything that we do out here, we're always, I have a, a record of being present or not missing votes. And I think that's the most important thing as a legislator, that we're here to vote for the 65,000 residents that we represent.
You also had a busy week as the Republican chair of the House Human Services Committee. We had an emotional hearing which featured the topic of in-home care for kids and how do we pay for that. It was also, we heard from parents of who care for their kids who require in-home care. We heard from nurses. Just why don't we recap that meeting a little bit and just your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, we deal with so many issues, you know, and a lot of them are interconnected, right? So there's different bills that we vote for on the House floor, and sometimes people come out and say, why did you vote against that bill? Well, maybe because it was an unfunded mandate, mm-hmm. and that unfunded mandate's going to, you know, drive up the affordability cost for families. So we had a hearing, and we had family members come in. We had providers that provide the nursing services for at home. But as a chair of the Human Service Committee, these are the issues that I think a lot of people don't always see. You know, unless you're dealing firsthand with an issue, like you look at property taxes or data centers. Right now, there's a lot of people that are affected by that, so that's the big concern. But every day, there are families across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that have children that they need to take care of. Some of them are on respirators. Some of them have several different types of illnesses or diseases or genetic things that child can't get up in the morning, get dressed, and go to school, mm-hmm. right? So maybe that child requires every hour or every 20 minutes somebody has to come in and clean out a trach tube. Who's going to do that? So we provide funding through the Department of Human Services and through the insurance, through whether it be Medicaid or private insurance, to pay for services in the community so these children can live at home because it's still cheaper to keep them in their home. But we have a shortage of nurses, and we have a shortage of aid workers. And a lot of times parents have to step up and fill that role, rightly so. Sometimes parents are going, you know, 48 or 72 hours taking care of that child, where every hour they're cleaning that trach tube out or feeding or helping those children. And there is a program so they can be compensated for some of the care that they give. Mm-hmm. How do we kind of expand upon that? And at the same time, how do we provide the protections in there? Because we're always looking at ensuring integrity in the programs. We could talk about that a little bit later in the bill that we're going to be voting today on the House floor. But to talk with those families and then talk to the providers and hear the struggles that they have to get a qualified workforce to do these jobs and how committed it is. But I've also gone out in the community throughout Carbon County, and I visited firsthand with families that have children that are in these conditions. And then these children become adults. And how do we make sure that they're getting the services that they need? A lot of times family members will have to leave their job. And because they have to take care of their child. And that, as a parent, as a grandparent, we all realize that our children are number one. Right. Everything that we do in our life is really geared to our children, to our grandchildren, and making sure that's our number one priority. If you have a job, you're working hard so you can provide for your family. Right. If you, you know, you're passionate about your school district and what's being taught in a school because you're passionate about your children going to that school. So as we look at that and you look at the families that maybe struggle and they love their children just as much as anybody else and they want to be there for them, and sometimes they have to make those sacrifices. And as a conservative, somebody that doesn't – fiscally conservative, I've never run into anybody that I encountered that would say to me, hey, I don't want you to make sure that child that can't get out of bed in the morning doesn't have a nurse that can come in and take care of them. Because I think we all realize that as we pay our taxes, that those are the things that we want to fund.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as chairman of the Human Service Committee, I focus on that. And we've had a good bipartisan approach. I thought the hearing, and it was, we recorded it, we put it on Facebook if you want to, you know, watch that and listen to that. And it's firsthand experiences. And I would encourage all my colleagues to get out and really visit, go to these in-home visits, visit with the different nursing programs, and visit with the parents that are there taking care of their loved ones. And sometimes it's, you know, it's a child taking care of a parent. I mean, a traumatic brain injury could happen to anybody at any time, and you could rely, you would be relying on these services. So how do we make sure we provide them? And that's what the hearing was about. I thought it was a great hearing. Chairman Williams and I work very well together on the committee, and I think it's something we need to address. And as we go through the budget cycles, it's something I've always prioritized, written letters to support home health care workers and nursing to keep these folks in their home, while at the same time making sure that nursing homes get are getting the funding that they need, making sure our hospitals are getting the funding they need, because these are the things that are important in our community. And but it's not, you know, 90% of the people aren't being affected by it. Maybe it's 5% or 2%. But I don't think there's anybody that doesn't want to make sure that those children or those adults don't have the services that they need.
The million-dollar question is, how do we fund that? And it's not that we don't want to. We want these kids to get the care that they need, because we heard how difficult it is, that even school nurses aren't equipped. And one of the parents gave a testimony that when paramedics show up, they're not even equipped to ready. So
yeah, these are the. This is a very special type of care, and I think that, you know, one of the things we're blessed with right now in Carbon County is we have two brand new hospital networks. We have a lot of services in the community, and I know firsthand that, you know, working parents that do have children or loved ones that have require special care, they can reach out to those hospital networks and reach out to the EMTs in the area and the ambulance and let them know that, hey, there's a child that has this. Here and it does help if there's ever a crisis situation or emergency situation. And that's one thing I really want to commend the hospitals in Carbon, Lehigh Valley and St. Luke's, because they are just phenomenal at what they do in identifying these issues in the community. But not every community has, not every county has two brand new hospitals. And I am very, very happy and proud of that for the residents of Carbon County. But at the end of the day, it's also why I'm very passionate about cutting back on waste, fraud, and abuse in these human service programs, because any dollar that's being stolen, and today we're going to vote on a bill that deals with SNAP benefits, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, bipartisan, to crack down on theft of those benefits for people that that are skimming these cards. But anything we can do to crack down on waste, fraud, and abuse in those programs can go to make sure that we're adequately funding and can provide the increases in funding so we can get the right trained people into these programs to help the children that need it.
Why don't we talk about that bill a little bit, maybe to wrap this up if we don't get into any budget remarks. But that's an example of you also working in a bipartisan manner. The chair, Representative Dan Williams, proposed that bill. You're the lead co-sponsor of that bill. And again, just remind folks what that does and how it'll save folks money in the long run when we talk about Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP benefits. Yeah.
So these SNAP benefits, these are federal dollars that come back to the state, and then the state then gets that money out to people that need it. So these are for low-income families and senior citizens that qualify for that assistance. Sometimes, you know, it's somebody that maybe has a disability. Sometimes it's a senior citizen. Sometimes it's a family, a single-parent family. But there's income thresholds, and there's a lot of safeguards in there. Yeah. But what's happening right now is if you go out to use this card, you just swipe the card. And everybody had a card that used to swipe. But there's these skimming devices, and these are organized crime syndicates that sometimes are offshore, overseas. They set them up at a grocery store, and somebody swipes their card, and instead of maybe they did a $20 purchase, it takes all the money off their card. Yeah. And then, you know, you have somebody in line at a grocery store with their kids, and they have a grocery full groceries in their buggy, and they go to check out, and there's no money left on the card. They didn't even know about it. So what this would do, this would apply the chip technology. Most cards you get now have a chip on it, but these cards don't. So the federal government, because of security, they're pushing it right now. There's a 50% federal match if we get this done by October 1st. Last year's budget, Dan Williams, Chairman Williams and I worked on language to put into the fiscal code to enact this going forward. It'll cost the state roughly $6.9 million right now to implement this. And then the federal match, that's with the federal match. So it's about a $14 million implementation. We get this done now, it saves the state $7 million. And any year, in 2024, it was 15. The projection for 2025 was about $20 million that were stolen. This will be an 85% to 90% reduction in theft of that. And there's still some other things. I would like to have ID on the cards, and there's some other things we want to do. But right now, this is something that we can agree to, and is what we can get done now. And this will protect the integrity of the program. It's something that the administration in Washington is pushing for us to do, and it's something that in a bipartisan manner, working together, we've been able to get it to the point where today we're going to have this vote on second consideration, and next week the bill will pass on third and go to the Senate, and hopefully it'll be part of this year's budget.
Well, knock on wood for that, because the Department of Human Services, which oversees SNAP, said that would be one of the best ways to secure those SNAP benefits, to get them into the hands of the folks who actually need those. So
yeah, and that's the key, is we want to make sure that the people that qualify for these, maybe somebody that has some health issues, somebody that's raising children on their own, somebody that senior citizen, and we want to make sure that those dollars aren't being stolen and divert it to God only knows what they're doing offshore with those dollars. These are taxpayer dollars. We want to make sure they're protected.
We have a long episode here of Talking with Doyle, but I think that's important because we have a lot of important issues going on. But we are recording this the first half of June, so we have to talk about the budget. Why don't we tee it up? Why don't we talk about an update where we're at and where we hope to get to by July 1st?
So there's ongoing conversations. I've already spoke to our leadership team about some of the things that I'm concerned about or looking out for in the budget. I would hope that we can have a product that I can support and that, you know, isn't going to raise taxes, is going to fund the things that we need funded in this Commonwealth this year, and it's going to be done on time. Last year, there was no reason for the long budget delay last year except for lack of communication. I do believe that there is additional communication going on right now because I've had discussions with folks as we move forward in June, and I would hope that we can get this done on time, and I'm calling the governor and all the caucuses to focus on getting this done, pushing that burden back on the counties and our local entities that rely on these dollars. When the dollars are here, and we can get this done on time. So I'm optimistic,
let's see what happens.
But on any issue, we're going to continue to advocate and do whatever we can, as we talked about earlier, persistence and pushing issues that we're passionate about, and these are the issues that I push because these are the issues that I hear about in my community. These are the issues that I experience personally because I live in Carbon County, been there my whole life, and we're going to continue to work on to try to improve the lives of everybody.